You're listening to the Dangerous Jobs Podcast. My name is Apollonia Rockwell, and I'll be your host as we dive deep into conversations with owners, safety experts, and boots on the ground from hazardous work sites and jobs around the country to learn what it really takes to make safety achievable in dangerous industries. On this show, we love talking about company culture, total worker safety, and greatness in the workplace. Let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Apollonia Rockwell Show, also Dangerous Jobs Podcast. And today I have a really special guest that's going to come to you with awesome stories, who has, most importantly, an incredible background. Today we have Bryce Griffler. And Bryce, thank you so much for being here. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me, Apollonia.
Absolutely. Well, like we were talking off air, I mean, I want to get into it. I have so many questions for you about your background, how you got to where you're at. Guys, Bryce is the co-founder of Safety is for Everyone. And from my understanding, Bryce, you really specialize in management training and leadership training. And that's what I'm super excited about, because not a lot of people really specialize in leadership training. And I think when we look at job sites, organizations, large and small, and we're looking at, okay, employee training, and then there's safety incidents, they're through the roof. And it's like companies often, you'll see, ask themselves, what are we doing wrong here? We need to throw more money into employee training. And I agree with your philosophy. It's like, we need to look at management stuff. So let's dive into it, Bryce. Tell us how you even got into safety to begin with, and then we'll get into your company.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everyone who is a safety practitioner says, well, I just kind of ended up here accidentally.
You're right about that.
Yeah, probably a terrible choice of words as well. And we're seeing more and more people who actually go and study health and safety, which is really exciting. But certainly I had no initial intentions of ending up in health and safety. My background is in engineering. Yep. And I worked as an engineer for several years before I fell into safety, as it were. And that was more a factor of job availability and what was there at the time. It was pure happenstance. But I think what is more powerful, at least for me, was the way in which I brought myself to work every single day as an engineer. And I assumed that's what I was hired for, was just to be an engineer. Engineer number 48963, you come in here, you do engineering things, and then you leave. And my performance reviews reflected that I was doing okay and everything was fine, but I really wasn't bringing my full authentic self to work. While everything seemed fine, it wasn't until things came to a head and I was in such a bleak place, kind of this dread of coming into work and putting on this mask, this facade of not being my full self, that our CEO at the time, Linda Hudson, who's known as the first lady of defense, the first female CEO of a major defense contractor, really inspiring. Wow. She put out word and said, we're going to do better around inclusion. And people took her to task and said, if you really care about it, then you should ask us what we think. And wow, for a global defense contractor, right, to talk about this diversity, this inclusion, this engagement, what does that all mean? So she put together a diversity and inclusion advisory task force and asked for people to apply. And I was in such a place that I felt I had nothing left to lose.
Yeah.
And so I applied. And out of 352 people, somehow employer engineer number 48963 was selected, right? And so I was really empowered and partnered with people who were far more senior than I was, and really helped me see that bringing my full authentic self to work meant higher productivity, higher engagement, stronger innovation. It meant that I was dedicating more hours to the company, and it meant that I was more willing to raise my hand and stop a process if something didn't seem right. And I think that's something we discount far too often, is if we don't foster this environment of, it's okay to go against the grain. It's okay to be different. It's okay to say what we've been doing for the last 30 years might not be the right way to do it.
Absolutely.
Right. And if we foster that environment, that's where we'll get the people who are on the shop floor, who know where the next injury is going to happen. They know where the worst hazards are. That's where we get those people who say, okay, I'm comfortable enough to raise my hand and say, stop. Right. We need
to
do
better. I just completely agree with everything you're saying, Bryce. And where my mind goes when you sharing that story is when there's not an outlet, when there is not an outlet or a comfortable, safe space to raise your hand and say, hey, I feel like what we're doing is, I feel like there's a better way, or I feel like this is a little unsafe. If there isn't that type of environment, then what ends up happening, as we all know, is hostile employee. You know, it creates this, like, this, how I envision it, just like this ball of negativity, right? If they're, if people don't feel okay speaking up, and if it's not welcomed, if that type of feedback isn't welcomed, then that's when the side chatters happen, or anger and resentment towards management or the company, then it will foster, right? And then before you know it, incidents are happening. And I love what you said, that the boots on the ground, the guys and gals in the shop, they already know where the next incident is.
Absolutely.
If you were to just ask them. Mm-hmm. So what did that look like? So then this committee was started. You're learning all these things about safety. I love how you, in your bio, doing research on you, recovering engineer.
That's right.
I forgot to mention that. But, but like, what did that process start looking like? How did you see the culture of the company start shifting? And what did it look like?
Yeah, well, it was a lot of uncomfortable moments, right?
Yeah.
And just going back real quickly to what you said about, about the hostility that's fostered. I think one of the worst things that as safety professionals we can hear after an incident is, I knew that was going to happen, or we knew that was a problem, right? And it gives you chills. Yeah. Like, you just, why did you keep that to yourself, right? And so, when we talk about safety, right, safety is for everyone. It's being safe and feeling safe to come out, feeling safe to raise your hand, feeling safe enough to stop work. And so it's not just about the warm fuzzy, right? And we'll get into psychological safety in a moment. But the Diversity Inclusion Advisory Council, you know, this unbelievable opportunity of a 20-something-year-old to rub elbows with the most senior staff at one of the largest global defense contractors. And I say it was uncomfortable because we were sent into an unbelievable amount of trainings for awareness and understanding just about diversity, equity, and inclusion in general, why it's critical for business. Just in the same way, safety, we're most of us are working for a business. Businesses are in it to make money.
Right.
And so it's critical we understand that tie. And so we went through a variety of trainings and understanding to become really diversity, equity, and inclusion practitioners. And I remember standing in front of one of the direct reports of the CEO and explaining how this is critical for competitive advantage, to lean into engagement, engaging people in the workforce that we normally wouldn't engage, going out of our way to find them. And this individual looked at me up and down and paused and said, why are you talking about diversity? And I understand, right? So outwardly, I am Caucasian, I am white, and I express and identify as a male.
Yeah.
Sure, right? So arguably, well, you're not diverse. And we can argue that there's different definitions of diversity, lots of aspects of diversity. But really, in this particular case, what this individual is getting at was, stand down. You don't have a place because you don't understand. Right? And so uncomfortable, but uncomfortable is where the growth happens, right?
Absolutely.
If we're not getting uncomfortable, we're not doing the work. And so I looked at her, and I, at this point, I had two options. I could have said, I mean, I was selected for this committee. You're right. I'm a white male. But also, you don't know this about me. I am a gay male. Therefore, I check the box of diversity. So leave me alone.
Yeah.
The second option I could have gone, which is what I did. I said, you know, I'm not sure I understand. We talked about the business case and competitive advantage to drive innovation.
Yeah.
When we do a better job of engaging all aspects of diversity within our workforce. So if we go back to the slide, whatever, and I talked through, and she wouldn't let it go.
Neither
would I, right? So we went back and forth a few times, and finally she dropped it. But there are going to continue to be these uncomfortable moments. And as we see them start to subside, we know we're affecting culture, we're impacting, having difficult conversations, but what is perhaps the most powerful is all of the people on the sidelines, the people sitting against the wall in the conference room, the people walking by, your own direct reports who may have overheard you say that. Wow, what an unbelievably powerful message of they're standing up for what we need to be doing better. And I'm going to do the same right off on my own. So that's really was the trajectory and the precipitator of a cultural shift within the organization.
And am I hearing you right, Bryce, that sure, when I hear companies implement a program that they're looking for engagement and feedback, I think a lot of the times where companies might fall short is where they're saying, okay, feedback is welcome. You know, we want near hits reported. We want, you know, we want positive moments, negative moment, you know, not just the negative. We want the positive. Here's our box, so to say, or here's the email to submit this to, or mm-hmm. here's the text hotline. And then it kind of ends there. But am I hearing you right that how, when this committee was formed, that it actually required the management team, leadership team, whoever, to go out and speak with boots on the ground and to pull that feedback versus just hope and wish that it would get submitted. So am I hearing you right? That you guys did interviews, so to say, and you were actually requesting feedback from the team on the ground?
Yeah. And I mean, I was partially representative of that team on the ground at the time, right? And
yeah,
so
yeah.
I think you are getting right to that the nail on the head there, which is we can invest tens of millions of dollars in inclusionary practices, in drives to really push for near hit reporting and the most unbelievable safety and health posters you have ever seen.
But if the
perception of your workforce is that you are not inclusive, that you don't care about engagement and that you don't care about safety, then that tens of millions of dollars was
yep.
useless, right? Perception is reality.
Perception
and so
is,
what,
yep,
what an
yes.
unbelievable, like essentially the CEO forced these individuals to have these uncomfortable conversations and went so far as to say, by a particular year, we're going to mandate that every people manager undergo a several hour classroom long training mm-hmm. around diversity, equity, and inclusion. And the people who are trained to deliver it are going to be trained facilitators, which I had the privilege of delivering many of. And these were some of the most uncomfortable conversations I've ever had to have. But as I transitioned from being an engineer into being a health and safety practitioner, more and more I began to identify that just in the same way health and safety is about getting better every single day and mm-hmm. continuous improvement, right? And our safety management systems all about never being done, always trying to improve and streamline and also recognizing the bottom line of the business. So too is diversity, equity, and inclusion. As frustrating and tiring as it sometimes may feel to hear about inclusion and getting different minds in the room, we used to have that same sentiment with health and safety, right?
Yeah.
And so many of our organizations have moved past the, oh goodness, we're going to talk about health and safety again, to, yeah, we actually talk about it at every daily stand-up. And then we talk about it right after lunch break, right? You've seen organizations make this shift. And I think diversity, equity, inclusion is not too far behind.
I love that. I love that it's not just a once a month, not even once a year conversation,
right?
Diversity and inclusion. You know, people hear that and it's like, oh, maybe that's the highlight of September that we're going to mm-hmm. be talking about. I mean, for the organization that you were working with at that time, what, you know, made it true high priority, you know, had this committee, had, you mm-hmm. know, it was, what I hear you saying is that it truly was practiced and the whole company felt it. And so you mentioned something earlier about the psychological pieces, maybe more mm-hmm. of the behavioral based pieces of safety. Can you tell me more about that and how, what your perspective is about it? And yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think when we talk about psychological safety, a lot of people can get a little bit uncomfortable and it seems warm and fuzzy. And that's yeah. not what it's about. It's not about kumbaya and making sure everyone has a seat at the table, but it's around fostering an environment that says, if we want to continuously improve, which we beat that drum as health and safety professionals so much, continuous improvement. And if we want to continuously improve, then we need to make difficult decisions with only the data that we have in front of us. And some of those decisions may end up being the wrong decision. And that's a risk, right? Gosh, we know about risk as health and safety professionals, but it's a risk that we're asking people to take now related to their job, right? Yeah. Related to their livelihood. And there's rightfully so, there's a discomfort in taking that risk and raising our hand and saying, I know we already signed this contract, but I don't think this was the right approach. I know we're 50% of our way in deploying light curtains, but I think we can do better, right? Thinking about our own workforces, how comfortable is it for somebody to raise their hand? And if somebody says, well, it is comfortable for me, okay, let's talk about somebody who maybe has 2 years with that employer or in the workforce. Do you think it's comfortable for them?
Yeah.
Or we think about people from different backgrounds. So we have data to share, or data that shows that those who are people of color, and specifically Black women, perceive that they have to work over twice as hard to demonstrate the same level of competence as their counterparts. And so thinking about that for a moment, what it would mean like to feel, right? Perception is reality.
Yeah.
To feel that you have to work twice as hard to be seen as equal to the person sitting next to you.
Just understanding that, just as even if that's not management, I mean, just everyone in the company, if they just understood that, how they would approach a situation differently, how they would approach somebody, have conversations differently.
Right.
You know, I think that changes everything.
Yeah,
when
and
you
it's,
have that mindset, yeah,
it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to talk about, right? Because there's a tendency for this to feel like a guilt trip if you don't fall into a particular category. And it's not about us versus them. It's not a category. It's not about what we call othering. But it's about understanding that different individuals had different starting lines. The playing field is not level. And it's not about you are better. Everyone has privilege, which is a whole different discussion. And everyone also has bias. That's just something that we have innate in us.
Sure.
But what it amounts to is I talked about all the people sitting on the side of the conference room. And I read Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, and she talks about the boardroom table, the proverbial, but really the physical boardroom table. And the number of females who sit along the side, who sit along the walls instead of at the table. And so I walked in as an EHS manager one day after having read that book, and lo and behold, I look at this giant boardroom table that accommodates 20 people, and there were 12 people there, and they were all men, and then I looked as another 9 women lined the walls, right? And so it's one thing to read about it, it's another thing to see it, but what's really important here as it ties to safety is those 9 women along the walls have really brilliant ideas to contribute to the conversation.
Yeah.
And the fact that they are physically separated from the table makes them significantly less likely to even consider contributing, right? Because of that risk. What will happen if I raise my hand, and what will happen if I don't raise my hand? If I don't raise my hand, there's really little to lose. Like, there's no risk there. I'll just sit off the side quietly, right? But as a leader and as an EHS manager, there are empty seats at the table. Can we all please move to the table, right? Very simple.
Wow. And you know what? This conversation, I feel like you have, this is obviously your expertise, right? And probably helping other organizations build programs like this, right? And so as I hear you speaking about your experience with this organization, you know, on this committee and even further than that, is that where your passion then began with diversity and implementing programs like this? And that is how you became the co-founder with Safety is for Everyone? Or is there a connection between the two? Or
Well, I think my journey towards this started in 2015 at an external conference. And I recognized that connection of continuous improvement for both health and safety and diversity, equity, and inclusion. Both are critical for business. Both yep. we need to keep driving. Both yep. can get tired.
Yes.
But both we will be better people for it. Our business will be better for it, and we'll drive more innovation for it. They're both there. Right. We have so much data to suggest it. And so my expertise and where I have a lot of fulfillment is around engaging those in the C-suite and understanding that tie to the business. And what's unbelievable is my co-founder of Safety is for Everyone, Bill Gettings, his expertise, his background is in law enforcement and public servants and coming up that way through health and safety, and really strongly engages on the shop floor with a strong focus on LGBTQ plus inclusion. And so him and I combined really can lean into engaging the entire organization wherever we may be offering our services. And so that's where we came up with the idea of Safety is for Everyone. Again, you have to feel safe, whether that's psychologically safe, comfortable, open, risk-free to raise your hand and speak up and say, I have an idea, I have a thought, I have a concern, in order to be safe in the workforce. So if you think about your assembler, your welder, anyone, those are the people that you want to feel abundantly comfortable to just walk, knock on that EHS manager's door and go, yo, I raised something to my supervisor, I'm not sure they're listening, I have a concern. Right? You want to foster that. So Bill and I leverage kind of that dichotomy of where we engage the most, and we offer consulting, training, and speaking services to that effect.
I'm just imagining the conversations you two have. Your backgrounds, recovery engineer, and someone from that type of background, your guys' minds together, I mean, with your experiences and serving different communities in a sense and coming together has to be so powerful. I could only imagine you two together. So that's phenomenal.
Yeah,
and
so we're so different. We're so different. Yeah. So that's what makes it so great, right?
Absolutely. So, I mean, this is out of just curiosity. So I would imagine, all right, let's say a company, because we have a lot of EHS professionals listening, right? And so I would imagine, let's say like a company around 100 employees, so medium size, and they're listening to this podcast. Kate Bryce, I hear you, diversity, inclusion. Like I heard a seminar about it one time last year, but it's something that is important to me. Let's say that they're, manage EHS, they're in management. How would I implement something so big, because this isn't a safety policy. This isn't a company policy. This is bigger than all of that. How would your company address something, a question like that, or somebody that's just wanting to get started?
Yeah. Yeah.
You hit the nail on the head. Question, but...
No, I think it's a great question. And so, again, if we correlate it to something like a health and safety policy, it's gorgeous. It's in a plaque on the wall. It's beautiful, mahogany and everything, signed by the CEO. Oh, I love it, right? But it's only as good as that plaque on the wall until we implement it. And it's the same way, you're right, for diversity, equity, and inclusion. We can write into our HR policy, thou shalt X, Y, and Z, right? Non-discrimination, use the restroom with that matches the gender with which you identify. We can put all those things, but it's only as good as what our culture and practice is. So I think you're right there. And so I would say, first and foremost, it's not something you can do alone. So if you try to do that alone, it could fizzle out. You may get frustrated or burnt out by some lack of resources. So definitely want to get others to support you, rally around you, and go in together. So when you talk about an organization of maybe 100 people, they likely have somebody whose responsibilities do entail human resources. When you think about smaller companies, may not even have a human resources professional. Maybe they outsource it, or maybe somebody wears multiple hats. And so starting in your human resources department, if that exists. But again, finding those people who can be confidants, finding those people, I've heard them talk about X, Y, and Z. I think that could be a good person to engage with and then say, okay, let's brainstorm what we can do. I would say some of the more organic things you can do is finding those people that you've never engaged with before, going out of your way to make the uncomfortable decision and finding that person who's always been a steady performer. They're always a solid assembler. They've never been injured. They're just they've been there for 22 years. Nobody ever bothers them, but nobody talks to them. Why? Go talk to them. right?
I can visualize that person in every client that I work with. Is that even keel, like the one that stays really mellow out of every brace? This is, you know, this is golden what you're saying here, because I love nothing better than a podcast where they're giving me tangible advice, right? Like something that I can implement now. I'm somebody that can listen to something and I can do it now. And so, I mean, just starting there, you've given such great advice. Hey, have a conversation is what I hear you saying. And it's going to be uncomfortable. And you have to be prepared for uncomfortable feedback from this conversation. And I would imagine that you have to be prepared to not only have a conversation, but be willing to, you have to, like you mentioned, have management backing you, and owner, if it's a small company, you need to have that backing to do something about the feedback, right? Because I feel like nothing would be worse than receiving feedback and then nothing's done about the feedback.
Yeah. So I think, you know, even so, let's take it a step back, and we're not on a big diversity, equity, and inclusion escapade to improve our workforce and get us labeled on the DEI advocate website. Let's back it up and just talk about safety, right? So I'm going to tell you about Rick. So Rick was an assembler who worked at a previous organization. He had been there for many years, I think just short of 30 years. Rick has a storied history there. Rick has seen some bad things at this organization. So here comes in this brand new safety manager who has an advanced education and a recovering engineer, as we talked about before, right? Like, what does he know? But Rick is, Rick has stepped up and wants to protect his brothers, sisters, and siblings in the union. So he has raised his hand to become the union safety rep. So that's awesome for Rick. Right. And so there's this potential for like company versus labor. Right. And that's what Rick has been fighting for years. Rick has been fighting that. And he came in ready to fight. Right. Just another safety manager. Let's go.
Yeah.
And it took me a little. Yeah. It took me a little bit of time. But I got to say, when we find those people who are quiet, steady Eddies working in the corner and go engage them in conversation, or if it's Rick who comes in guns a blazing, the best way to have a conversation is to shut up.
Yeah.
Is to shut up and listen, because they have things that they want to say. And some of the things they're going to say, you're not going to agree with. Some of the things that they want to say, like Rick was a professional problem raiser. That is, he brought all of the problems to the table and then did nothing about them. This is this. And so listening, with all of my listening that I did and then repeating it back to him, what I hear you saying is X, Y, and Z, right? And Apollonia, you have some of that skill set because you're doing the same, and I've picked up on that. What I hear you saying is this, this, and this. Finally escalated to the point of, Rick, that sounds like a problem. What I hear you saying is X, Y, and Z. What can you do to address it? And he said, well, I can go out, I can do an assessment of this, inventory this, and then check off all these boxes. I said, when can you get that done? He said, I can have it done by Friday. I said, Rick, that'd be amazing. And he stormed out of my office and took care of it. Right.
Oh my gosh.
A great success story of this person who's just constantly battling. I mean, Rick was pulling out emails from the early 90s, right? Printed emails from the early 90s of, well, this is what the company did. This is what the company said. I'm like, Rick, I wasn't even right. That's what that engagement looks like, is just being quiet and listening. And you know what? When there's silence, just be quiet for another few seconds, because they will fill in the silence and they will tell you about the stories they have, their ideas, their brand new grandchild at home, the idea that they have to fix this, address this. Just be quiet. And then what happens is, when you walk away, they have this warm feeling that you actually took a moment, which as Americans, we're not very good at. You took a moment to listen, right? And they're going to come back for more later.
Absolutely, Bryce. I feel like you and I have so many similarities in our backgrounds. It's unbelievable. And I have just a very, very similar story that I've shared on the podcast so many times.
What was their name? Let's just say the first name. That's all.
Kevin.
Possible and I would be like, Kevin. So your Kevin. My Rick was your Kevin.
Oh yeah. And I feel, I bet you so many people listening are just like,
they all have a Rick or a Kevin.
Because everyone has, yes, has a Kevin, has it. So, oh my goodness. Because, and my solution was just like yours was, I was going through schooling when I was a EHS director for this company that had a welding shop and a trucking division and a roustabout division. And this guy that was just the unspoken leader, right? The unspoken leader. He was like the boss of the shop and was the rebel of the shop and, you know, just wanted nothing to do with me. And when I finally butt heads, finally just was like, man, like, how do you think, Kevin, we could get the guys to start wearing their face shields? Like, what would you suggest? And he was like, nobody wears these face shields because they don't like the brand. You know, it's the brand, it's the type, it's the style, and they fog up. And that's the reason why nobody wears them. At my last company, they bought us these. And I'm like, let's get them purchased. Let's get them ordered, the ones that you want. Sure enough, I got them purchased. And then he was the cheerleader, the safety, you know, representative of the shop. And, you know, listening to your people, implementing their ideas when it makes sense, letting them handle their own problems when they can, is what I hear you saying. And it's worked tried and true for yourself, for myself. And that's great advice for everyone listening.
And it's not something I would have come up on my own, right? All the schooling, all the experience I've had, all the auditing, it's not something I could have come up with on my own. But if I didn't have some uncomfortable conversations with Rick, recognize that Rick and I are very different in many ways, right? But still foster that relationship, then we never would have gotten to this point. So it's not about becoming best friends with everyone. It's just not going to happen. That's not the intent. But if you become best friends only with people who are like you, you're gonna keep developing the same solutions over and over again, which may not be effective. You're not going to grow yourself, right? Yeah. And that's our affinity as humans, is to gravitate towards the people who look like us, act like us, feel like us, think like us.
Right.
And that's not a bad thing. It's just kind of how we're built, because it's easy. It's easier, right? When you walk into a room, maybe you're at a networking event or a party, you find the person that you know, or you find the person that looks kind of like you, or there's a group around them. You don't go to the person that doesn't look like you, that's sitting by themselves at one of those tall tables, maybe just kind of looking around or on their phone. You don't go to them because, you know, there's a fear of they won't be like me. But why? Right? We've all been that person kind of off on our own. So why wouldn't you go engage that person?
Absolutely, Bryce. There's no better way to have wrapped it up as beautifully as you just did. I think that you've shared so many great pieces of advice that we can take in action today. But most importantly, you've given so much advice to challenge. Like, when I'm listening to something, I felt like you've challenged me to think differently, starting now, starting today. The next time that I'm in a room, am I gravitating towards the group and people that I know the most? I mean, absolutely. Like, you're speaking to me when you're talking there. You know, you're giving me advice, is, you know, just challenging us to, and I love how you said that. If we're always, one, we attract the people that we're most like, we want to stick to them. And then we get our advice from them. We get our solutions from them. And if we keep trying the same feedback,
it's a
and
giant echo chamber.
Absolute. We're going to end up with the same year, the same advice, the same solutions. If we're talking about a safety program or a company program. And like you mentioned so many times through this, if it's truly our goal in a health and safety program, as a company goal, to grow and be better and to do better year after year, we're going to have to start thinking differently to achieve different results.
Yep.
So I'm
get the unusual suspects in the room, people you wouldn't have thought to get in the room. Yeah. That's where we're going to get the most unbelievable solutions.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you so much for today, Bryce. I can't tell you how thankful I am. And for everyone listening, we're going to link Bryce's website. We'll link platforms where you can get in contact with him if you have any questions. If you have, you know, questions, really, this is your expertise. I could tell. I could you know, it is tried and true. And so I would, you know, if you have questions about implementing a program like this, this is what Bryce's company does. And most importantly, if you have questions for Bryce, if you just want to get, you know, ask a little bit, feel free to reach out to him. So thank you again, Bryce. And hopefully we'll stay connected and we'll chat soon. But thank you. Thank you everyone for listening.
Thanks so much for having me.